Okay, very good.
So first question, how are people doing? Okay, this is when springs, sort of the second class of springs. How many people have one problem? How many people have all four problems working? Nobody. How many people have three problems working? Nobody. How many people have two problems working? Okay, I see one arm up and another arm reaching to go up. Okay. How many people have one problem working? Okay, a couple. How many people have no problems working? Okay. Are the people with... So maybe we should go through this. For the people with no problems working, any particular complaints?
File fragment,
okay. Well, let's think about which the problems are that people are working on, and let's see how people are doing on them. So first of all, let's go through these things and see how people are doing and who's tried what. Where's Waldorf? How many people have done that one successfully? That's been done three times. How many people have not done that one yet? Or how many people have tried and failed? Okay, any comments about this one, about why you're trying and failing? Or? You're saying that yours, you think your program's right, but the judge disagrees. One reason might be, and they're thinking about this thing, one thing that's probably true with this case is you have to do comparisons in eight different directions. Correct? Is that right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And you've got to also adjust for upper and lower case. Why do you think that did you write your program as eight different cases, or was there some simple way to? And how sure are you that all eight are working? Okay. Any of people got it working? Did they have any particular problems that came to mind?
I think it's working, but I haven't had it compiled past the judge yet.
Oh, okay.
So it's only working simple.
Okay, the judge is what we're writing about. Yeah.
I had mine passed the judge, although I did a presentation error. I'm not sure why that is.
Presentation error is okay, right? We say accept it, but yeah. Presentation error.
In terms of, what I would check for is maybe. Is there a situation where you get a crash or something by trying to have the first three letters correct of a word and then it tries to be the fourth letter goes out of bounds and then it tries to catch the first four
things? Well, you have a Bowsbury test condition?
Yeah.
Meaning somehow that we have a lot of tests go.
Right.
Okay, well then maybe a plus or minus, it's possible you have a boundary error where you think that you're testing right to the edge and maybe you're testing one beyond or two sort of. Okay, well somehow the judge is checking more. Yes?
This brings up an interesting point. I don't know how much, maybe I missed this.
You're allowed to talk with each other. And in fact, I was happy when I came in class today. Everyone seemed to be talking to each other. That's good. You want to send test cases back and forth? I don't think that's necessarily a problem. I think I'll let you send test cases back and forth under duress, like when one guy's had it. You want to send him your test cases. That's probably fair. Code is verboten, okay? So that's, I guess, the basic rule. But I do encourage people to chat about that. How many trials did it take to get the Where's Waldorf test the judge?
Finally, I did it.
First time, okay. So, so that says it's fun. How many lines of code did you have? Ballpark.
200?
Okay. When you were doing the Where's Waldorf thing, the fact that you had the thing that struck me as interesting about that problem was again you were doing a comparison for patterns in eight different directions, right? In principle, starting from any point,
you might have to compare the thing, you know, the pattern in 8 different directions. Now, do you write 8 different loops for those tests, or did you do it in a somewhat cleverer way?
Yeah, I didn't want to do 8 different loops because it seemed like, you know, the possibility for error was going to be greater. So I tried to, basically what I did is I created one procedure and then passed in 2 parameters that indicated the x and y directions. So like I would pass in -1, -1 to go up and go left.
Right. This is something that I think is probably, so you say basically that looking this way is +1, +1.
Right.
Look this way, it would be presumably -1, 0 or something like that, you know, depending on what your notation is. Okay? And that somehow that basically you have one loop that's basically being parameterized by what direction you're looking in, as opposed to 8 different loops that were, you know, doing the thing. How are you doing it, Mr. Kraft, in limbo? Okay, you have 8 different loops. Well, my guess is one of them is wrong. Okay? Or a boundary case is wrong, or something like this. I may be wrong, but your program is wrong. So this is one thing, this is an example of what I would call programming defensively. If you've got 8 different loops with a lot of indices working around in them, we have some fairly complicated index manipulation. Okay, in each. If you can parameterize that in terms of something simpler, you're more likely to get the, you know, less likely to get the -1s and -1s wrong when they're as a arguments to this thing. Because presumably you're going to be doing 8 argument calls, and you can sort of see which way it goes. Okay? Any questions? Right? It may not even be 8 argument calls.
Yeah, I'm just, we also checking to make sure there's 2 words, 2 same words in the graphic, to check the one that is most highest and most highest. But you want to like 2 words, 2 the same word. You have to return the one that is highest.
You
check the first side of the word though, because if you solve that,
yeah.
It goes backwards, like the beginning of the word starts at the bottom right and it goes to the left. Technically that word would appear before like another one. Like let's say you're looking for 4. So if you find 4 on the second line, so
the last one is higher.
Yeah, I think that actually sort of means much further.
Okay,
it's all known as the first letter.
For the first letter.
First letter of the word.
But the E gives like the last letter of the word gives before the first letter once you consider the first letter.
Okay, so we have to read the specifications carefully. There's now a debate as to where is the first occurrence of the word, you know, let's say, that's a good word, this. Okay? Is it up there or is it down here? Okay? And as lawyers, when we read the document, what does it say here? Okay? Then if a word is found more than once in the grid, then output the location of the uppermost occurrence of the word. I.e., the occurrence which places the first letter of the word closest to the top of the grid. Okay? So, okay. Did you do it differently in your program?
I don't know, but I mean, I know I did it for that, but I think I said it.
Okay, you have to see how you break ties. Any other questions or comments about this one? Okay, how many lines of code out of curiosity was yours? Okay, 300. Again, the larger program is the one that's not working. That's sort of the lesson to take away here. Okay, and again, there may be other lessons, but that's one thing that I think is empirically an observation. Okay, any questions? Okay, any other results with Boyes Waldorf? Okay, so the next one we had was Crook Kicker. How many people have done Crook Kicker? Okay, you got a test to judge? Okay, I only care what gets past the judge. So why do you persist on not sending it to getting it past the judge?
I'm sending it to the judge. I got 3N+1 past the judge.
Yeah.
Everything else was in the file errors.
Because you're a Java person, right?
Yeah, I'm working on that.
Okay, are there Java people who've been getting things past the judge fairly routinely?
Yeah.
Okay, you have how many?
I haven't gotten the test, but I don't get the compile error.
Yes, I haven't gotten the compile error.
So you get wrong answers, okay. You're getting occasionally right answers.
Yeah. Particular two, I'm getting wrong answers.
Okay, so if you can't get your programs compiled by the judge, you need to figure out why. And I recommend
less Java.
What?
I'll make less Java. I'll use less things from Java.
Okay, yeah, but this is important to do.
I think I might know. Are you using like vectors or anything like that?
I use vectors.
Yeah, I realize that they use the 1.1 API, that some of the methods to add into the vector, you have to use the old methods. Like, you can't use add. It sends you an email saying that these methods are not known and stuff like that. So for add, I would just do an element, like add, I forgot what it is, I think it's add an element. And then try using those. You might look up for the 1.1 API.
Right, but no, this is important that you get it past the judge, because again, as far as I'm concerned, any program the judge says does not say is right doesn't exist. So you're always coming here getting a lot of programs working, but as far as I know, they don't exist.
Are we there in the programming challenges judge to work now?
Right now, supposedly, and this is a change, the C and C++ and Pascal supposedly works, okay? The Java, you're telling me, is still a work in progress.
So far, no Java
files correctly. Right, but I would like to see some of the C++ people try to submit their programs there. You mean some of the old ones you're kicking around. Eventually, you're going to have to get them into the programming challenges judge. So now might be is a reasonable time to try. Any questions? Okay. Any other Java frustrations that people are having that we should talk about? Yeah.
And I'm not sure if this is a Java thing or what, but I can almost invariably get my, of the programs that I've gotten to work as a judge, they almost always can get presentation errors, and I can never see any.
Presentation errors are not anything to be afraid of. So if it gives you, if it says gives you accepted but presentation errors, don't worry about that. That is because, very, very minor things will cause presentation errors. For example, a blank at the end of a line would cause a presentation error. Okay, or
a line feed at the end.
Or maybe a wrong line feed, maybe something like this. So basically, if you get your thing accepted with a presentation error, it is accepted. I am perfectly happy with accepted presentation errors. Not presentation errors, but accepted presentation errors, which is usually what you're going to get. Any questions? So no, don't even feel guilty about that. It's just the way life is. Okay, any questions? Okay, so that is the Where's Waldorf program. TripKicker 2, how many people have been working on TripKicker? I see four people or so. And you got it working or no?
I'm just getting a wrong answer from the judge.
So what is TripKicker saying? Let's just make sure we understand what this problem is doing. The problem is, as I understand it, and correct me if I'm wrong, that you're given a bunch of lines, and you're told that one of them is encoding of the quick brown fox jumps over the lazy dog. What is an interesting thing about the sentence, the quick brown fox jumps over the lazy dog? Yeah?
Contains every letter.
Okay, and it's, if not the shortest, one of the shortest sentences that do it, that does it. It's probably one of the ones that makes the most sense. So the advantage of saying that once you know that one's been encrypted by the substitution cipher, that if you know which sentence it is, in principle that tells you what the mapping of every letter to every other letter is. Okay? And your job is to somehow try to figure out which sentence is that, build up the substitution code, and then recode all the text. Okay? Any questions or comments about that, or issues to discuss? You said you couldn't get it to work. Has anybody gotten it to work? Yeah, you did? Passed the judge? Okay, then that's perfectly acceptable. Okay, how many of them do you have working?
One.
That one. That one only. Okay, fair enough. So I'm telling you, if there's anything, what would be interesting about this particular one? How do you identify which sentence is the quick brown fox jumps over the lazy dog? Okay, yeah?
Basically, I create an array that get a conflict, I know that that's not the correct sentence, and I can move on to the next sentence.
I see. So what you're saying here is, I think, the following kind of an idea. The you're saying that you originally have this table mapping what is A to Z going to be mapped to. And you're reading in each sentence, you know, each line, like, let's say, what is the one that works here? On this example here, X
and M, I guess. And you say, well, if this is going to be mapped to Z, what you're going to be doing is saying that X, that depending on how you do it, X goes to T, or T goes to X, I don't know which it is. N goes to H, and M goes to T. And you wait until you have a contradiction.
Also, of course, the space is having an
object. Is that enough to have a contradiction?
It should be, because you're hitting every letter in the alphabet.
Well, what if you had, this is playing devil's advocate here, what happens if you had a sentence that, is there a way that you could not have a sentence that does not contradict, but also does, does not use all the letters? Okay, let's just, I'm just thinking out loud now. Okay, yeah? Right. So you're coming up with, what you're doing now is you're saying for every letter, you read in the letter, you map it to this, and you see is there a conflict. Now you can imagine a situation, I'm just trying to double check, you know, the question I'm wondering about is, depending on how you're doing the mapping, and you say that you yourself don't know if you were mapping these to those or those to that,
right.
It's not just enough to say that, oh look, I'm mapping two symbols to this, you tell me X should be T, here somebody else tells me X should be G, okay, that's then a problem. Another potential problem would be that if some of the letters got left blank, okay, so I think you could solve that problem potentially by checking back and forth.
Except for you're never going to have necessarily a blank letter, right, because you're comparing it against the sentence that contains all of the letters. Right. I mean, if you say, oh, okay, I'm going to check P and see if I have a conflict.
Depending on how you're doing it, the answer is quite possibly yes. Okay, you might not have that problem, but it's something to, I'm just trying to figure out why you might be having problems.
Okay.
Yeah?
What I do is I take a whole line of input, and then I use a string tokenizer. So I don't know if you know what that is in the state, but
okay.
Basically, you know, then I'll count how many words are in there. So when I know it's 9 words, I throw that sentence to a function. Where then they'll start checking like each word, you know, basically they'll pass each word and then I'll check, like, the first word is going to be the, so I have to check these three letters have been mapped to the, and then the second loop will check all the letters to all the printed letters.
Okay, so you're saying you're using a tokenizer. Okay, so one thing that he's saying now that's getting, which may or may not be news to you, is he's using some more advanced string algorithm library functions. And let me just, while I'm talking about this, talk about string library functions in the three languages. Alexei may have mentioned some of this before, but one key to working well with strings is to know what, let's say, library functions you have available and how you best manipulate strings, okay? In C and C++, in C/C, there's two different sort of relevant string libraries around. Okay, there's one as a character library. Okay, that it has a bunch of very very trivial functions to test: is a character an alphabetic? Is it uppercase? Take a uppercase letter and make it a lowercase letter and make it uppercase. Things like this. Okay, and so, in principle, once you know how to use these things, you don't need to write them again, okay? You have to make sure that, in fact, they do what you think they do, okay? And, like, for example, two uppercase converts a letter to uppercase,
does it actually, what if it's already in uppercase? Does it check that before doing the conversion? Okay? This is not obvious to me. You have to, you know, read the manuals. You got to figure that kind of stuff out. Okay? But in principles, C has these kind of, this library, which is sometimes useful. There also is a string library. Okay? And this is where, let's say, I would say the heavy-duty string functions exist. Okay? And it probably pays for us to go through them. At least it's sort of in principle, because all the libraries will probably have something that's somewhat similar to it. What is a string concatenate function? Which is going to return the pointer to the string you get from the string pointed to this and the string pointed to that. Okay? And it sort of concatenates strings. Now, whether it overwrites one of the strings or not is one of the weirdnesses you'll have to figure out if you use these kind of libraries. Right? So in a concatenation function that returns a concatenated string for this times this, where does it actually put it? Okay? I believe it puts it in this first argument. But you have to read your manual to figure that kind of thing out. Okay? But you should not be necessarily writing your own string concatenation function. It's better to use the library. Okay? String compare. Given two strings, return are they the same or not? Pointers to the two strings. Are they identical or not? Okay? And this is, you know, potentially useful. Okay? If you're just doing exact string matching. Where's Waldorf? You had to worry about upper and lower case. How did you worry about upper and lower case? Here's an interesting question. Did you do the upper and lower case at the... How did you learn to handle upper and lower case?
Just whatever the input was, I changed it all to lowercase.
You changed the input all to lowercase, and then worked with it before, right?
Just have the output numbers.
Yeah. Okay, so one possibility is that you do two upper and two lower when you do the comparison. The other is that you just change it once and forget about it. And that's probably easier to do it and forget it. Of course, if later on you find that you needed to know whether it was an upper and lower case, you would be in trouble.
Yeah.
So maybe the right way to do it is the more general way. I don't know, but there's two different ideas. The thing to be sure is, does two upper and two lower do what you want? Like if it's already upper, does it mash on it? You may want to, if you're having trouble, you may want to check that out. What other functions do we have? There's a copy function. There's a function to return the length. Okay? String, I'll confess I don't remember what it is, and my caption is off my slide. Is that one?
Search for second string and search in first string.
So that's a search for a sub, it's a substring search, right? This is one that says basically, does this string occur anywhere within that substring? So let's say you're looking at a sentence and you want to find out if there's a dirty word in it. This would be pointing to your dirty word, this would be pointing to your whole string. And you want it to sort of say, you know, where does this thing occur in that, correct? The function that he was talking about was this last one, string tokenizing, which basically did, let's just double check what it is. It took as input a string and a, what do you call it? What else does it take as input?
Well, I didn't do it in C, I did it in Java, so basically created the next so string tokenizing and the argument.
So I'm going to use a string, and what's it going to do? Is returning? Does it tell us now that a space is what separates?
Well, I mean, I don't know how it works. I guess.
Okay. So basically, you're telling it to take the string,
yeah,
and give you a, you know.
Like, I guess the way you go parse through it is basically there's a method called text token that
right.
Basically returns the string.
Right. Okay. Now, with this particular problem, I might wonder about, is there problems with, suppose I put two blanks in a row in a sentence, what would your string tokenizer do with it?
I'm not sure, but
string tokenizer will ignores all white space. So basically it'll just return the two words.
Okay, that may or may not be what is useful here. Again, I don't know. It's, you know, we're just sort of thinking about that. It's important to be aware of that. So that what you're really saying is that most languages have some support for what I would call a highly formatted input routine. Okay? And that this tokenizer that you're doing is saying, give me the string and grab out interesting strings. Okay? The advantage you get by using that is that you get you know, it's simplicity. The disadvantage is that you may lose some control over what it's doing, okay? And that may or may not be an issue with you. Yes? Let's talk about, this is one that I don't use, okay? So I will confess that I don't use it. What does it say? It says, iterate words in string one. What I believe it does is the following. Here is a string. It probably assumes that that this string is just a word separated by white space. And so when you call it, given the string, it will return where is the, it will return maybe a copy of the string that, the first word in that string. So it provides a way for you to sort of iterate through the string word by word. That's really what in principle is trying to do. The mechanics of what it does, you have to read your manual for. Okay? That's sort of what we mean by a tokenizer. Okay? Sort of broke the string into tokens. Any questions? Okay, so you should be aware that if you're working with strings this way, you should be using your libraries. Okay? In C++, again, C++ has sort of, you know, a string class, okay, that does these things and also lets you do other things. So again, you can sort of take a string, you can find it, you know, you can size, is it empty? You can return a pointer to a C string. Sometimes, again, we didn't really talk about how strings are represented in a computer, okay? I mean, did Alexei talk about that last class? What? ASCII values or the three schemes for representing strings?
Making ASCII values.
Okay, I may go through that again because I think it's kind of interesting. But so C++ lets you take a C++ string object and return a regular C-style string, so you could use C libraries functions, so you can use other things on it. And what does it let you do? It lets you access the ith character in the string, which means you can iterate through it by yourself. You can append strings together. You can erase the leader run of characters, you know, insert a substring at a particular position. You can find things, find where this string exists in that other string, you know, looking to the left or to the right, get the first or last characters and iterate through them, okay? So you do have this kind of support in C++. Any questions? And again, in Java, you know, again, there's... correct me if you're I'm wrong with how how you manipulate strings in Java. There is a string class, also a string buffer class. Okay, these are two different classes of strings, and it's important to see what they're different. The string class is for strings that are not going to change, meaning you're not going to insert characters and delete them and manipulate them that way. String buffer is designed for sort of allowing dynamic strings. Okay, and so depending on what you're doing, that may be important. What I'm saying, reasonably true, or, yeah.
It's reasonably true. The bizarre thing about Java is that most people don't even realize that a string is static because it acts as though it isn't in a lot of ways. Like you can say, oh, if you have a string S with ABC, you can say, S equals S plus HGI.
You're saying that even with static strings, you can manipulate them dynamically.
Yeah, but what will happen, of course, is it will actually give you a new string object and assign it to that.
Right. So really what the difference here is a question of underlying implementation. Okay, the question is a lot of issues with strings that relate to how is the string actually being represented in the machine. And what I'm guessing is that string buffer is a more general type of implementation. Okay, that gives you more flexibility, but at a cost in extra space, okay, and things like that. And the string, and so, you know, if you try to manipulate a string in a wrong way, you just copy it over to a string buffer class. But it's mainly an efficiency thing. If you're working with static strings, this is presumably more efficient. Okay, and that's, I guess, why they distinguish between them.
Right, like you have, if you had some kind of data structure that stored strings in it, so it's, of course, you're storing the references. And you try to manipulate a string in there, you can run into problems. It's just a string because, of course, it'll create a new one. And if you manipulate that string, you know, it perfectly happy doing that, but it creates a new object with a new position. And meanwhile, your data class or your whatever is still pointing at the old place.
Okay, so you have to know what your representation is. Any questions? One other thing to keep in mind that's interesting is when we talked about character codes, okay, or when Alexei talked about character codes, I assume he flashed up this slide about what ASCII is. ASCII is this 8-bit code, and this is what the way the world usually was. Now we are moving on into a more international standard of computing. The character code designs such as Unicode are used. So now lurking underneath, any reasonable computer system is not necessarily 8-bit ASCII anymore. Okay? There is a coding design called Unicode that has been developed so that you can encode any symbol you want. But basically, any symbol in any language in the world can be represented using 2 or 3 bytes per symbol. And there's a standard coding of what this thing actually is. So character codes are no longer necessarily 16-bit, 8-bit entities. And Java characters are designed to be 16-bit entities, so they can manipulate Unicode naturally. Okay, so if you're going to be manipulating Java characters and you're an old C person who thinks about 8 bits, you have to make sure you get access to the right 8 bits. Okay, presumably the lower 8 bits, if you're dealing with an 8-bit ASCII character. Okay, and so that's a point of some potential confusion. Any questions? Again, if you use, one thing I've noticed, again, the world has become more international. One thing I've noticed is when I get email from France these days or someplace else, or from Miguel, suddenly his accent looks right, okay? If you look at, when I get email from Miguel Revilla, suddenly on my machine, there is the I has a tilde on it. And how did that happen, okay? Well, over the years, my machine on my desk has been upgraded to work with to assume a non-ASCII character set, okay? And a non-7-bit ASCII character set. And so now a lot of symbols get coded in like that. Okay, so now you can get accents right and things like that. And that's a result of sort of using other character codings behind the scenes. Any questions? Okay, good. Okay, let's talk a little bit more about the problems of the... Actually, anyway, let me just review one thing, which Alexei may have talked about. But it's one thing that I really think is important to understand. Okay, it's a question of how is it that strings are represented? Okay, how is it that your computer represents strings internally? Did Alexei go through this slide? Okay, so let me just go through it very, very briefly, and then there'll be a quiz afterwards. Okay, so just to make sure people get it. Because the question of how you represent strings in a computer makes a big difference in how easy some of these exercises are, how easy it is to work with strings. Okay? The classic C++ Unix string, okay, C string, is represented as a null terminated array. So how do you represent the string? You allocate a chunk of memory sufficient to hold that string and possibly more. You represent the string as a pointer to the first element of the string. And let's say you want to represent Steve in this array. You then end it with a null character, which is ASCII 0. Okay? So to represent the string, you need to allocate enough memory to make sure that it's fixed. Okay? But the way that a string is denoted, the end of a string, is a null character. Has to be explicitly stuck at the end of the array. Does everybody agree with that or understand it? What happens if you don't remember to put the explicitly write the null character? What happens? It reaches, bad things happen, right? It will keep reading. Print the string. If you try to print the string, it'll print string, blah, 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 expletive deleted. Okay. Okay. Until you get a null, okay?
or something bad has happened, okay? So this representation is good in certain ways, but you have to remember the null, okay, for explicitly manipulated springs, right? So one thing just to keep in mind, again, that in C, that the first element is always in the zero spot in the array. Does the spring length include the null when you use a spring length function? Does it tell you the length does include the null?
No.
No, but so the spring length of this string would be 5 characters, okay? Where does the null go? It goes in the character position 5. Because the string is 4 characters, 5 characters, 0 through 4. So make sure you put the null there and make sure you put it the right way. Any questions? So this is the way strings are a common string representation in C/C++. What is another way to represent strings? Another way is what I would call the array plus length routine. First of all, what happens also if you put in a string that is larger than the array that you allocate for it? What happens? What happens if you try to put Steve Skeena in this array? What? Well, you will be doing an illegal memory access. But C is probably, you may get a quarter. C will not warn you that you have exceeded your range in your array. Because it has no idea how long your array should be. Okay, so it's up to the programmer in this representation to be careful they don't step outside the bounds. Any questions?
Well, what did it say, though?
What did it say, it's indeterminate what would happen. So I mean, it depends what's in this next variable. If in this next variable is something that you don't need, then if it steps on, maybe you have to have another string variable after it you don't use. Then if it steps on, you know, no one will ever know. But it might be, but weird things can happen. Now let's say when you write to this variable, you might change the contents of your string. So all kinds of bad things happen if you exceed the space you allow for it. And in C, there is no warning of that. Okay? Any questions? So what's another representation? The way that I think at least the string class in Java is probably represented as is it represents a string probably as two things. One is a length counter and one is an array contents. So it's a Steve Skeena that's maybe 10 characters long, okay? Do we need an explicit end of string character here? Not in Java. Well, you don't know quite what Java's doing under the hood, but does Java need it? It shouldn't need it if it knows the length. It knows where it starts, it knows the length, okay? So we can figure out where the end of string is, right? Any questions here? What would be an advantage of this kind of representation? Yeah?
One thing is you can flag a lot of illegal like access. Like you say, oh, and then the compiler, for instance, can say, oh, then you got. But in some cases, you could say, oh, what's the character at 15? And when it tries to run.
At runtime, because it knows how long the string is, yes. It prevents you from accessing outside the string. Okay? Any questions about that? Okay. Yeah.
Saying another good thing is it frees up the array from being the direct representation, so if it needs to change the array behind the scenes or whatnot as well.
So you're saying is that the string is probably being represented by a count and a pointer to an array. It's probably what is really being represented as the Java string data structure. And this why later if you decide to concatenate Steve Skeena, you want to give me a married name or something like that. You want to make my name longer. Okay? You can now allocate a larger string and just have that pointing to that. So that's probably what you're saying.
Java doesn't do
that. Exactly. What Java's doing under the hood, you don't know. I don't know. None of us know what's going on behind the scenes. Okay? But in principle, that's a guess as to what's happening. Yes?
A somewhat minor plus maybe is that returning the length.
So one thing is it does, and this does make it faster to return the length of the string because you already have it. Whereas in C and Unix, when you ask for the string length, you have to pop, 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 pop. That is true. That's why one performance thing, if you have a C loop where you're always computing, 4 is I less than or equal to this, the length of the string. If you have that within your loop, it will be computed every single time. That's a performance hit, as opposed to having it computed outside the loop. You're right. Any questions? Okay? So this is one way to do it. What is a third representation? A third representation might be to have a string represented as a linked list of characters. Now, what's the advantage of this representation? Okay? And then maybe it'll end at the, you know, C. What's, yeah?
It's pretty easy to insert a character into the middle of the
Bible. Inserting a new word into the middle of the Bible would be easy if you had as long string representing the Bible as there any other book. Okay? You sort of insert anywhere, you don't have to move the characters around. Okay? That's an advantage. What's a disadvantage of using the linked list representation?
Yeah?
Space. Okay, this is one thing to sort of realize, is that here you're using, if let's say we were using an old style string, you're using 1 or 2 bytes to represent the character. How many bytes is a pointer? Probably, you know, a pointer in memory.
It's about the space of a... A little bit more.
Probably about 4 bytes, I would say, on a real computer these days. That would argue that you're using 6 bytes to represent every character. 75% of it is basically just pointers. There's a lot more storage space here. Okay. What else do you lose with this representation? Yeah.
If you happen to want the 900th character,
you have to cruise through the list, right? Any questions? Okay, so my guess is, without knowing anything, the first way is how you would represent it in C. The C compiler represents strings. The second is how the Java string class probably does. This way be how the Java buffer string buffer class works. Okay? Any questions? Yeah.
Have you ever seen anything like the combination, like the linked list of null-terminated arrays or a linked list of arrays plus weight?
There's probably an arbitrary number of different possibilities. These are the ones that I'm most familiar with. Okay? And let's see which is better now. Okay, let's just go through the list to see which, to make sure you understand the implications of these. Okay? Which one of these three representations uses the smallest amount of space? You will play the first one uses a smaller amount of space. Yeah? First and second one? Probably, yeah, okay, yeah. Okay, so there's, in some sense, the difference is one is storing an extra null, the other is storing an extra count. If you want, I say they use about the same amount of space. Part of it depends upon how big your representation of a count is. Okay, any questions? Which one constrains the contents of what strings can be represented? Okay? Can these represent the same? Can all of them represent arbitrary type strings?
I don't think the first one, C, can that represent the info naturally? Because aren't those, I don't know how C does it, I'm not a C person, but those are 1 byte increments, right?
Well, these are 1 byte increments, okay, as in a C string. Okay, so one thing you're saying is there might be a problem that you're right, that if you have 16-bit codes, then, you know, there's a problem with that. Okay, independent of that, okay, is there, can you represent all 8-bit strings? Okay, yeah?
Yeah, you can have a string of null characters and zeros, and that's a legal ASCII string, but in C it will only be...
Right. What if you were, let's say, the, you know, if my name, I gave my name to Skeena, Steve Null Skeena, okay? A null character. I cannot have a null character within a string in C version, where I can have it in the other two. Does everybody agree with that? Okay, now in general this hasn't been a problem, but it's something you have to deal with potentially. Yeah. Well, the question of what you print out a string as. A null character prints out as a null. It's a junk character. Okay, so a null character shouldn't print out as anything when you print it out. Okay, but neither should a lot of other 8-bit quantities. Okay? So there's no reason why, it's not obvious why null should be treated differently than escape or any of the other. If I wanted to get my name to Steve Escape Skeena, there's no reason that would be fine. Okay? But, so it's not a question of printable versus non-printable, it's a question of null versus non-null. Any questions? Okay? Which ones allow constant time access to the ith character?
First two,
okay, right? Because you basically have an array lurking underneath it. Which ones allow efficient checks to whether the ith character is within the string to avoid out-of-bound errors? The second one enables me to prevents me from accessing outside my string, most naturally. You know, because I'm asking you sort of, give me the 10th character, and this character only has 9 characters in it, this method could warn me quickly. I could cruise through the list, and if I hit the end before that character, that would give me a way to, I could also warn you of that. Okay? But that involves cruising the list. Yes?
Well, it'd be pretty simple to modify the third one. You just include a little extra, make little length on that.
Yeah, I could also include, you know, if I want, I could include the string length thing here. Okay? Yes?
Is there any way that the first one, does it have any notion? I mean, somewhere. Oh, you know what? Okay, got it. So the first one will have a notion of how much memory you've allocated, but there's no easy way to.
Well, the first one there is a memory of notion of how much memory was allocated,
right,
which is the maximum capacity of the string.
Right, the string could easily.
But that's not passed around with C strings somehow. Okay. So you no way that they can look at this location and tell me how big is the array that I'm in. Okay? Any questions? Why you get 4 nulls? Okay? Any questions? Okay? Here's one. Okay. Which ones allow efficient deletion of insertion of characters at the ith position?
Got the last one.
The last one is the only one that lets me do these things without explicitly moving text around. Here's a question. Which representation is used when users are limited to strings of length 255? So if you want to, you know, in Windows, you're not allowed to make a file name of length greater than 255. The name of the file can't be longer than 255 characters. Why is that?
The size of a byte.
The size of a byte. But wait, why? So which representation are they using? I will claim they are using, which one are they using?
First one.
First or second one?
First one.
We're having a debate. Who says first? Who says second? I believe second. Why? Why does it explicitly, why would they explicitly care about the string not being more than 255? They're going to let that first array only be, suppose that first element here was only 1 byte long. You could represent the numbers 0 through 255 in it, correct? And anything longer than that will give you trouble, right? You can't fit longer lengths than that. So if you use, the length of your string is constrained by how many bits you use for your size field. Okay, does everybody agree with that? Okay, that's why that magic constant probably emerges. Okay, any questions?
Could you repeat it one more time?
Okay, so why, suppose let's say I knew that I wanted to represent my strings very efficiently. I knew I was only going to be using short strings. I might allocate only 1 byte to the field that tells me the length of the string.
Oh.
If I only allocate 1 byte, 8 bits, to store the length of the string, that limits me to storing strings from length 0 to 255. Okay, and that is my guess is the primary reason why they limit, you know, you sometimes see these 255 limit, string limits. Any questions? Okay, so it's important to know what is under the hood when you're working with strings. Any questions? Okay, let's go back to the problems here. Okay, so
quick kicker, we talked a little bit about how do you identify a, how do we identify the, you know, which was the pushdown fox, you know, jumps over the lazy dog. Does anyone have that one working? I don't remember. You had that one working, right? How long was your program? About 200 lines, okay? So in principle, it's the same length as the others. Any questions to remain to discuss about that? Okay. Okay.
We'll talk more if we need to. What about the next one, was file fragmentation?
How many people have tried this one? One. Has anybody else tried it or gotten it working or anything like that? Okay, let's talk about this problem.
Because I'm not sure this problem is, let's see which one this one is. I think this problem is not actually that hard, really, necessarily.
That's going to be crazy.
That's why you're very attractive. So what is the problem stating? Let's make sure we say this. We're given your friend, a biochemistry major, dropped a tray of computer files, and all the files broke.
But fortunately, they were all copies of the same string. So my interpretation of this problem, and you guys should correct me if I'm wrong, is we live in a world where we were given a bunch of copies of the same string. Okay? And that somehow at arbitrary places the string broke. Okay? Okay? And now what you're given is the fragments. Zero. Let's go back. Let's go over them in order here. Zero, one, one. 0, 1, 1, 1, 0, 1, 1, 0, 1, 1, 1, 0, 1, 1, 0, 1, and 1, 1, presumably sorted by length or in some arbitrary order. And your goal is to try to figure out what was the original string, knowing this. Okay? Any questions here? Okay, how do we go about it? Any ideas how you might go about this problem? Yeah, okay.
Well, the way that I did it was find out the lengths of the fragment. Find out the lengths of the file.
First of all, how would you find out the average length? So, how would you find out the average, the length of each file, the length of the underlying file?
Sum up the lengths of each fragment and divide that by the total number of fragments divided by 2.
Okay, does everybody agree with that? If we have all the pieces, if every piece was broken into 2 pieces, we know the length, we can say we know the length of the string. So what was the length of the string? 3 plus, okay, I erased it already, so I don't know, but we can reconstruct that. 7, okay, I'll trust you on that. So we have 7 slots. 5, 6, 7. Is that right? Okay, so the question now is, can we figure out which strings go with which other strings? How would we go about doing that, yeah?
One thing you can do initially is recognize that since there's exactly 2, you can pick 2 items. And if the sum of the lengths of those 2 aren't equal to that 7, then obviously that's not a pair that's going to go together.
Okay. So you want to say that you want to break the strings into pairs such that they're length add up to 7. Is that basically what you're saying? Okay. So what would that mean here? You've got then what are the pairs on this particular problem? 0, 1, 1. 0, 1, 1, 1. That's 7, right? What's the other pairs? I guess I have to have written it out in this order. 0. 1, 1, 0, 1, 1, 1. 0, and then the other pair was 0, 1, 1, 1, 0, 1,
1-1.
Okay. Now how do we go? Okay, what are the possible strengths? First of all, is it clear that there's only going to be two in every bin?
No.
That there's at most two in every bin?
No.
Why not? What, how else is it going to be?
You could have two of them weight in the same. So you could have two of length three and two of length four. So, you want to
so two of length three and two of length four. Okay, how can I get two of length three and two of length four? It could be that I broke, instead of my string was, I'll admit, 0, 1, 1. 0, 1, 1, 1. Okay, I could have maybe broken it off here. And now I've got a 1 and a 6. So these would also get thrown into the same pile. Okay? So that's something we do have to worry about, isn't it? Yeah? Okay.
Something that's
so that maybe we may have found something about what may be wrong with the program.
That was why
I kind of drops out of this is that there's only two possibilities for a string of a certain length.
Well, how many possibilities are there for a string by possibilities? How many possibilities are there for a string of a certain length?
I would find only two.
What are the two?
Well, for a string of length six, it's going to be either the first six numbers or the last six numbers, because we know that each file is broken into exactly two pieces, which means there's only one break per file.
Well, so what are the possible strings consistent with this data? Guys, there's a one here. I want to claim a priori, there might be four different strings, right? Because it might be that you might pair this with this, and this with, you know, or this with that, and then this first or less.
Right. I guess what I meant is this, there's only two possibilities for each substring.
Two possibilities for each pairing. Although, what if they're the exact same length? What if we have something of size 6? Let's say it was even numbers. I split it in the middle. I guess there's only one way to split it in the middle, so there's only two possibilities, right? Okay. So somehow you have to try them and make sure that everything you get is consistent, okay? But I think at this point, this should be a doable problem.
How do you compensate? I mean, I realize what my algorithm, why it was wrong. You can either break it so that, like if you look at it, you can either break it up so you have one of something of length 1 for 0, and then another one which will be length 1. So how do you compensate for that?
How do I correct... deal with this possibility where there might be multiple ways of matching.
Right, because you're not always going to have that. I mean, you first have to try to find it first, and then...
How would you deal with it? Okay. Anybody have any ideas how you would deal with this possibility? How do you find out which is the right one? Yeah?
My initial thought would be to try to basically do it recursively. Try one solution, and if that doesn't cause any contradictions, try to add the next portion of the solution. And then as soon as you actually do get contradictions,
well, okay, that sounds complicated to me. Okay. Any ideas? Yeah?
Well, you basically need to get two matches out of that, those four substrings. So you could try matching them every possible way, and then seeing if you get two matches, those are the right ways to do it.
But you won't always get a situation where you're going to have those four possibilities. You might only have two possibilities.
You only have two possibilities, then there's only two choices. Okay? I mean, my immediate idea would be to try all four possibilities and then check for consistency across all the other examples, right? And anything that is consistent across all other examples is presumably a winner. Okay? Any questions? Okay, so this I think is a doable problem, right? Okay. I think they're all relatively doable. Well, at least so far, all relatively doable. Any questions? Okay, the doublets one. Did anybody work on that one or look at that? Okay. Again, one general thing that I recommend is that you don't be afraid to read the all the questions before you start working on one. Because it's not necessarily true that the first one in the book is necessarily the easiest.
Okay? I mean, it might be, okay? I try not to make the first one the hardest, but, you know, it probably pays to read them all. My personal belief is this might actually be the easiest one in terms of lines of code, but that might, you know, we'll find out when people actually do it. The doublets one is kind of an interesting one. It says that you're given a dictionary of words, okay, and you're given pairs of sentences, and you are asked to find the shortest conversion of one string to another. We are allowed to change one character at a time, and it has to represent intermediate words. Then every intermediate step has to be a word. Okay? Is anybody, yeah?
I just had one question, so I didn't try it. When it said you can only change one character at a time, I wasn't sure if they meant only substitution, or if you could also add a character or remove a character.
Okay, my interpretation here is, finally, okay, it says here, a doublet is a pair of words that differ in exactly one letter. For example, booster and rooster, or rooster and roaster, or roaster and roasted. My interpretation of this is that you're not allowed to insert or delete a character. Okay? So maybe it would have been nice if it explicitly said it. Okay? But I see no reason to believe that. So if I were doing this, I would start out bravely and assume that that's what it is. Okay? Any questions? Okay? So let's take a look at it in English. It's kind of a fun game in English. Let's look at two words here. Can anybody come up with a cat and dog? Let's just think about it. Can anybody come up with a pep in English of three-letter words to convert cat to dog?
Cat to cot.
What? Cat to cot.
Cot. Dot. Cot to dot.
Cot to dog.
Cot to dot.
Cot to what?
Dot.
Dot. And dot to dog. Okay, so that would be one of these doublet chains, okay? Is that the shortest possible conversion? In this case, I believe that that's true. Okay, but that's basically what your program has to do, is given a bunch of words, figure out what is the, what is the shortest conversion from one word to another. Any ideas how you would go about this?
Any questions about the problem or ideas about how you might go about it?
Yeah.
Take the first word, figure out all the doublets, and see.
Take the first word, so you read in the dictionary somehow, you want to now take the first one word and find out all the words that are within one of them.
Right.
Okay?
And then without repeating, so you have to make sure you repeat. Then you do the same for the next. For all the words that are one way, you find their words that are one way. And when you find the end word, that's going to be the shortest path, because you're basically scanning the tree.
So the next thing that you're going to do is explore this one.
Right.
Okay? That's sort of what he's going to propose to do. Are there words to describe what you're doing? What would you call this in computer science lingo, what you're doing?
Brute force.
I would say breadth first search. Okay? Brute force is a question of what, you know, again, what kind of trouble could you get into? With memory.
State time.
Okay, if you're doing it just purely like this, we start out from a word, look at all the possibilities. Okay? What is one thing that's gonna happen?
You have to recreate this data structure every time for every test input. So like booster and roasted, you have to create it starting from booster and then to the next input you have to start from post and things like that.
So what are you complaining about?
Well, the problem is that, I mean, if your dictionary is 25,143 words, and you create that data structure every single time, you're going to maybe run.
There might be a hit here, okay? So, yes.
You can, when you're first given the 25,000, you can just separate into the 16 letters, 15 letters, and just create different
equivalence classes. You can certainly create equivalence So you're saying that come out and take the original dictionary and break them up into equivalent classes. These are the one word, one letter, two letter, three letter, four letter words. Okay? And what's the advantage of that?
Won't be, so if they're only looking for like an eight letter word, you're not going to be searching through like one letter and all the other.
Okay. But does that in the worst case necessarily help you? What if I gave you 25,000 words, all of which were eight characters long? Okay? Is there any way that we can avoid, yeah?
You can just create that data structure once.
You can build this data structure once.
And then just search it.
Yeah.
And is there any, my inclination is to make a graph instead of a tree, and then do like a regular search across that graph.
Okay, so these are the words that I would be thinking about if I were doing this one. Okay? Is the word breadth and breadth first search is the word that I would be looking for. Okay? How many people here have not seen, and be honest with me, how many people have never seen breadth first search?
I don't remember it.
You don't remember, but should you remember it from what you've been taught?
When I took Christina's 214 class, they're like one of the last subjects he went over, and he went over it very
quickly. Right. So the way that I would probably do this problem is I would build a graph. What is a graph? What is a graph? You remember what a graph is? What is a graph? Yeah?
Connected nodes.
Connected nodes. Okay, what else? Any other way of saying that? Or so if we're going to represent this problem as a graph, what are the vertices and what are the edges? Yeah? I think you got the lingo backwards. I think of it as being, if I take a look at this, here's a graph. Maybe I'll make it a star graph. The vertices are these, and the edges are the things linking the vertices. So now, what would you represent make the vertices be? The vertices would be the words. Here we would have cat would be this vertex, and cot would be that another vertex, and dot, and dog. And what would be the edges? Yeah? Connecting each word, or so you have an edge from here to here? Each word that differs by exactly one position, right? Okay? Does everybody agree with that? Now then, once you have this structure built, you should be able to answer questions for every pair of words, right? You know, this is now something that you build once and you forget about it. Okay, or you use it again and again. Okay? Any questions or comments? Yeah.
One thing I was wondering is, and maybe this is pretty obvious, how do you find a particular word in the graph? Start from. Like, for instance, I go, oh, well, now that I've got my entire data structure, I want to find.
Okay, so you're saying now that I've got this graph structure, how do I represent, find out which vertex is associated with dog?
Right.
How do I find the dog? Okay? How I might do this would be I would have a dictionary data structure where I have all the words in my dictionary. Maybe sorted, you know, cat, cot, dot, dog, dot, and then what? Have a pointer to what I'm doing. That's what seems to me. What if I have more than one edge? You mean, I see, in this particular, it's only that here we only have one, then every pointer, every word is only pointing to one other word. That's just a function of my graph. Let me add another one. Let's say CAD. CAD is adjacent to cat. Okay, now cat has two words going out of it, right? No. Well, there are a couple different questions of how I represent it. For my dictionary of words, I would have CAD here. Each word is going to go to only one vertex of the graph, right? So for his problem, here I only need to have an array of records where I have string pointer, right? And I can then do the lookup. What you're asking about is how do I represent this graph? What is the data structure for this graph? Okay? And this is something that we're going to talk about in a few weeks. But if you want to look ahead, if you look at chapter 9 in the book on graph representation, graph traversal, that will give you an idea of how you can represent this. Okay? Yes? It turns out that in neither C nor C++ nor Java is there really a standard graph implementation. So you are going to have to write your own. You might want to look at my examples and my chapter, my graph, my code in there if you're a C person. Or even if not, you should be able to read it. If you look at my chapter 9, that will give you ways of how you might implement that. So we're going to spend a few weeks talking about how you implement graphs later on. But realize this is an example where we have a graph problem sort of hidden and lurking at you. Okay? And once you think in terms of graphs, it becomes sort of straightforward. Okay? But it takes, if you haven't seen them before, it's important to get a handle on it. Any questions? So this, I think, is probably the most involved of the three, of the four, just because it involves knowing something about graphs. Okay? Any questions about any of these problems? Okay, or all the problems, or anything else? So the first three here, I think, are quite tractable. Okay, I it would not shock me if anybody got all three, and it would gratify me if someone got this one. But this is probably doable. Any questions? Okay. Let me just think if there's anything else to show you. Let me just, since I've got a few minutes, try and see what else I can show you here. Just hopefully everybody's beyond this, or maybe not, but here is a simple C program just to search for how you can do searching for whether finding where is there a pattern spray located within a text spray. Let me just review. This is in the book, but let me just review it for those of you who are C-type people. And maybe if not, for sort of how you manipulate strings at, let's say, a per-character level. Okay? So here's an example of a routine I wrote that searches for whether or not a character, a pattern string, appears somewhere within a text string. So what did I do? I computed the string, the length of the first string, the pattern, the length of the text. And then I said, for I goes from the text string to the pattern length. Okay. And then, so what is my first pointer going to be doing? My first index here. For I goes from 0 to text length minus the pattern length. What is that index I going to be doing? Yeah?
It's going for every possible starting point in the pattern in the text.
So it's taking every possible starting point within the pattern here. Why did I have PLAN here rather than just putting string length of P? Does anybody see that? Yeah? Yeah, so this is one of that efficiency things because I don't trust how long it takes to compute the string length. Okay, I'd rather do it outside the loop than in the loop. Okay? And, why do I say it's TLAN minus BLAN so that I basically know that I can't have a starting position of interest that's closer to the end of the string than the length of the pattern, right? Everybody agree with that? So then I have a J loop. My J loop says while J is less than BLAN and T sub I plus J is equal to PJ, pop J up by 1. Okay? What is this doing? Okay? It's now for a given starting point, iterating through all the characters, starting from that point, and seeing whether the
I plus J character of the pattern matches, or the text matches the J character of the pattern. If that does that for all possible positions, then I have a match. Okay, otherwise I don't. Any questions? Okay. How would I modify this to compare upper and lower if I didn't want to care about upper and lower, the difference from upper to lower case strings? Where would I do that change? If I had a character that was upper and lower, yeah.
You have your is equal comparison.
Yeah, I have to have a is this equal or close enough to equal. Okay? And so that's where I would change that kind of thing. Okay? Any questions? Yeah?
Wouldn't you want to, my explanation would be to change it before you even start the loop, because you don't know necessarily, I mean, it's going to be like O of N to go through those strings and change it every time you do it inside the loop, right?
Well, no. So you're saying that if here what I'm doing is testing, is this character the same as this?
Right.
What possibility is that I make my test broader so that I don't, so that I allow them to be equal if they're capitalized. You're proposing instead I go at the beginning and take the whole string and limit it lowercase.
Right.
What's the problem with that? My string comparison with D is now destructive.
Well, you can just make a copy of it, right?
Well, you want to say make a copy of it. Now you're using a lot of extra memory. Let's say that one of these strings is, the Bible or something long. Okay? You're making a copy of something big to start out with. I would rather be manipulating the individual characters as I took them. Why? Because it's going to take constant time to test whether this character equals that, right? That's one comparison. If I have to make this lowercase and copy it over, and then to compare the copying things, those are still constant time, right? To take one character and make it lowercase and the other character and make it lowercase is still, copy it someplace. Those are all constant time operations. So I don't take a complexity hit by doing that. Okay? And I don't want to destroy the original string, and I don't think I want to make copies of things I don't have to. So I'm probably better off doing it that way. Any questions? Okay. So good luck on this thing. Keep beating on it, and hopefully we'll get some solutions by Thursday. Oh, what other announcements? Again, two announcements. One thing is the programming challenges judge is open for C and C++. Try to get your programs over there and let me know what happened. Okay, for next time. The other thing to keep in mind is this weekend there will be a programming contest that the Students Computer Society is running. Does anybody know anything about it? It's going to be Saturday or Sunday. Okay, it's around noon. I don't remember if it's Saturday or Sunday, but we'll announce the details next class, so you may want to play around with that. Okay, thanks a lot.
What happened?